Hi, I'm Josh, and you know, I don't see any point in buying wristwear from Apple because, you know, next year they're just going to have a better watch out.
Oh my God, I hate you.
Mm-hmm. Well yeah, you done, do. Joshua.
Shut well up, Charlie.
That was good.
Don't encourage him.
That was good.
I have like good. Somewhere Bob Alberti's smiling. Kyle Decker is just like twisting his hands. Yes.
It just nicked local the outside corner for a strike. That was good.
I hate you all so yeah. much.
Art Allen, enjoying life right now?
Hi, I'm Matt. And turns out my Christmas horror story is a room full of puns.
Room full of puns. This sounds like the world's worst improv group name.
Oh, God, that's almost too close to home. That sounds exactly like an improv group. I was going to say it's my Flock of Seagulls cover band, but, you know, that's cool.
Oh, Lordy. Okay, let's see here. This is Charlie Dan Austin. It's kind of a bummer. I had a small little slim chance with Lucasfilm about a year ago. But the thing that made it short-lived and got me kicked out of Kathleen Kennedy's office was pitching the idea of a character named R2-P2, a droid who also has to urinate.
Josh, you're vindicated.
All right.
Charlie.
His whole gimmick is that he also has to pee. I think he's really funny.
Well, Charlie, I gotta say, on a scale of 1 to 10, you're an 8. And this is Horror Show Hot Dog.
Oh, so first so things first, watched, you suckers.
Nope.
I want to make sure first, to
I'm the realist.
To curtail any making fun of us getting snowed out in Austin. So last Thursday, Darling Child was up at a buddy's music performance, and so my plan was he's taken care of, he's safe someplace. I'm gonna go see Shape of Water, and so I got my ticket, and it was gonna be great. And so I will go see it, and then it was really good. And then I was gonna go leave work, and then it was a torrential fucking snowstorm. And, like, in the great city of Austin, we're not built for snow or ice. And so, like, it was, as it was coming down, not be able to see 5 feet in front of my car, I was like, I should go home because that is where safe is. And so I did that, and then I missed the movie. And so then I was like, okay. And then, so then we had a snow day at Austin, so I was able to go see it the next day. So before you people in Minnesota make any jokes at our expense, do understand. That it is quite stressful because we don't get that stuff here often.
Sure. Two things, points of clarification. One, how much snow did you get?
A lot.
I've literally this first I've heard of it because I don't watch news.
Couple inches, right?
It was a couple, 3-4 inches, but part of the other problem was that it was like, it dropped, part of the main problem was that they were like, oh, it'll be like mid-high 30s, don't have to worry about ice. And then it was like, in the course of like an hour and a half, they were like, nope, fuck it, death ice, like down into 30s, 20s is like snowfall, all the stuff. And I was like, oh shit. So it was like, it became epic really fast.
Josh and I are both being very adult and only kind of doing that weird hunch you do when you're trying not to laugh. Because I do respect that is not a normal circumstance where you're from. And here's the thing that I'll point out that not everybody remembers, ladies and jelly spoons, because I really love it when Charlie says that, is that is trifling. That is literally how I went to work every day last week. And the thing is in Austin, were I there, I too would have stayed home. Because I can drive in 3 or 4 inches of snow with glare ice everywhere. God forbid I have to be around people that live in Austin and perhaps live in Texas their whole lives in 3 or 4 inches of snow. So you made the right call for a silly reason. There is a legitimate reason.
Here we got like 4 inches of snow here, and it quadrupled my commute.
Yeah, that'll happen the first couple times for sure.
Because people, it doesn't matter that people have been doing it their whole life.
I'm still walking to and from work, by the way. And it's 17 degrees at 5:30 in the morning.
I could have walked faster.
Yeah, it takes me about 45 minutes. But I walked to work in about 15 degrees in the dark in snow and ice.
It is uphill both ways as well. That's the trick.
I mean, to be fair, portions are. Also, this morning I was so tired when I went in because I had to leave so early. I tripped and fell on an escalator. And my bad knee is way bad now, including like what I learned later when I went to the bathroom and pulled my pants down for the first time. Blood just caked to the inside of my jeans. And I was like, oh, I thought that felt weird. Like, I fell so hard. I had like, I have three deep grooves in just under my kneecap.
Fear the groove.
Had to like, okay, took a shower. And Megan's like, what's up with that? I'm like, oh, yeah, I fell earlier. And she's like, cool. And as I'm washing off, I'm like, ah, this one scab won't come off. And I realized there's a strip of skin I kept pulling away.
That's a load-bearing scar. Don't pull that one.
It was not good. But, yeah, so that's Minnesota winter. Hardy folk we are.
So, Charlie, would you say that it wasn't the quantity of the water, it was the shape of the water that was the problem?
Because it was the
snowflake shape.
Well, the other problem that we run into here, we've had this about 7 years ago. The one 7 years ago was a little more dangerous because we got like a bunch of rain and then the temperatures dropped. And so we had like crazy amount of accidents.
Yeah.
It was really bad. It was one of those things like that was a little bit different. But the primary thing really is that in Austin, like everything is elevated. All the roads are elevated. Like go from my route home from work to my office or from work home. Like 80% of the commute is on like roads that are not like on the earth specifically. Like they're like raised up or there's hills
much
and bumps
worse
and things.
Ice.
And yeah. It's like when they say it's hill country, like I ain't fucking around. It's the hill. It's lots of hills and bumpy shit. And so that's the other problem is that like there's all these areas where ice and slick stuff will just happen like that. And so it's just like, it's really dicey. And so it's one of those things where it's like, well, I know the kid will be safe because they're up at this place and they'll be until it stops and they'll be all right. But I'm like, you know, my car is like, he doesn't work. And also I can't really see out my windshield and I should probably go home. Like it's just sort of, it was kind of one of those situations. And so I was like, well, I'm going to endure a lot of teasing, but it's like, I wanted to cut that off at the pass because it was scary, but I did get to go see the movie the next night and it's fabulous. So that it all worked out in the end, and then it was fine.
And that's all the time we have for this week on our brand new segment, weather from places you probably don't live.
Until next week, don't snow like my brother,
and don't go to see movies like my brother because they technically got a movie. And son of a bitch! All right,
write to us at our fair city, Minneapolis, Min. I don't know. Oh, Car Talk.
I loved Car Talk.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know what you could
it.
Do to Car Talk is you could call in on a phone.
Yeah,
and that
could.
Phone could be a rotary phone.
Oh,
and our
no.
short for the week was,
look at what you did there.
Was called Rotary. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little 2-minute job from Crypt TV. We got two women closing up at their costume shop they work at. One of them leaves and says, you gotta come to the party. And other chicky gets a call on their old, like, Bakelite rotary phone, and suddenly it's, like, bright light outside.
Like she lost almost, or I guess a night.
She's just kind of standing there looking confused, and then she goes, see something move in the back room, and it's...
Well, she's feet get dragged out of sight, which is... I think that is the creepiest part.
That was lovely.
That's fucking good. Yeah.
And then Spooky Face Girl!
I feel like Spooky Face is generous, but we can get to that.
Face Girl!
Yeah.
And then... hang up the phone. It's night again. Holy shit. Friend pops out from behind a row of costumes like a dick to scare her. And then she says, I don't think we're alone. And friend looks over her shoulder for just the right amount of time.
That's pretty good.
And then back to scary face right over lady's shoulder. And
yeah.
Blah, blah. So, you know, it's 2 minutes. It's
simple concept.
It's cool. I like the weirdness with the... like, there's no reason why she hears weird noises on the phone and suddenly it's morning.
Yeah.
Or she has a hallucination or a vision or something.
Doesn't that it's an alternate reality? Like, when she picks up the phone, it's daytime, she's seeing shit she can't see, and then all of a sudden she kind of cuts back to, like, putting the phone down. And it's like, now you're back in reality, but you've...
oh,
it's like rubbing
gravity.
A lamp, right?
Yeah.
Like, you've let the genie out of the bottle somehow. And, like, I kind of like that. Literally, my only, I mean, it's a screamer. It's just, there's a thing at the end that kind of spooks you. And that's fine. Many movies are that. But my big complaint is like, this is sort of like a juggalo demon. Like, it's just kind of
terrifying.
I don't say a juggalo would be scarier. Cause like meth is freaky. Mm. But I just, the makeup is neat. But that's the problem is it's neat. It's not scary.
It is more like death metal.
Right? Or like a pro wrestler, or, you know what I mean? It's just, it's like, oh, it's cool. Like, it looks more like Darth Maul than it does anything else, except it's just gold and black.
She's got horns, yeah.
And it's just like, it's not scary. I think if that creature design, and I'm assuming that's a budget thing, and that's totally fine. I get it. You know, if you ask me, how do you make a crazy, spoopy monster? I go, well, you go buy a kickboxing mask and use paper mache, and people probably shit all over that for my fringe show. But, you know, like, it's just like, okay, like, they probably did the best they could with what they were doing, and it's like, yeah, fuck, like, had that been something that actually scared me, this whole thing might have been, like, A+, awesome. But unfortunately, the thing I was meant to be scared of wasn't scary.
Well, it was interesting that you said the thing about the costume shop, because it didn't really occur to me that that's what it was.
I thought it was a thrift store.
I just kind of thought it was, like, a thrift store. But the costume shop thing, though, like, what if you just put that mask on a back shelf someplace? Like, it's just in with a bunch of other shit. But then it's
that works.
Oh, now it's animated and alive and, like, all jacked up. Like, I don't know.
Well, even if it's an unmoving mask, at least then it's a thing that shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or that's
the
thing.
And that's cool.
Like, I don't know if you...
Because you think it's your friend fucking with you and then, like, oh, no, it's behind you while your friend's talking to you. Like, that's cool.
I remember my darling child was telling me years ago when... he's really into Pokemons. But there's this one Pokemon that, like, who's like this ugly thing, and then he like dresses up in a Pikachu costume so that people will like him. And so it looks like a Death Wraith wearing Pikachu skin, and it's the creepiest fucking thing. And it's also
there's a couple really creepy.
It's like, God
Pokemon.
Damn, yeah, they're really scary. So like, take that idea, like have the costume mask thing, but then have it be like, oh well, there's something wearing the mask, but clearly is no good. Like, yeah, that kind of idea, like, take it from the reality and then make it really jacked up, kind of a thing. You know, not unlike in Krampus and Brad Doherty's Krampus, like, with the mask and the thing and the face underneath and all that stuff, like, make it a thing, but then have a thing behind it, you know, and then bring it from reality backward or whatever. And maybe that's what they're trying to go for, you know, just in some degree or other. But I'm with Josh, though, like, jacking around with the, like, the time frame and, like, the kind of, like, the flashing back and trying to figure out what's going on and that kind of stuff. Like, that's really nifty. And I appreciate that level of, like, kind of narrative moxie to kind of get after it. You know, yeah. I think it's cool.
Yeah, I think there's definitely talent on display here. I think it's just, like I said, my only beef really is just that, like, ah, crap, the scary thing doesn't look scary to me. Mm. And your mileage may vary. I don't know. So, like, I would say all told, like, I'd watch this. This is worth 2 minutes of your time.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
like, yeah, for a 2 minute short, it has to be pretty awful for me not to say, just
yeah,
watch
I think
it and
this
see.
Delivers.
And this one, I think, is cut above some of the other efforts we've seen as far as the, like, oh, it's behind you kind of deal.
Yeah. Which I watched a few of tonight trying to find a short. Mm. It was like, oh no. As soon as this thing, like, the lights come on in the short, and I'm like, oh, it's going to be X, Y, and Z. And sure,
lights out again.
Like, yeah, just like, woof. But yeah.
Hey, well, to move on to our Christmas feast this week, we started off with Christmas Horror Story, or La Historia del Terror de... La Historia del Terror Navideña.
Ah, Navideña.
Because I was going to say de la Navidad, but Google Translate informs me that if it's like Christmas as an adjective, it's Navideña.
Ah.
Which is cool. I'm into it.
Fair.
So this is it's an anthology... But an anthology that's kind of all four stories being cross-cut between
it's
each other at the same time.
Closer to a trick-or-treat
right.
than like a VHS or something.
Yeah, so the shorts are not discrete units, even though they are written by different people.
Yeah, but they're, yeah, you're watching.
Yeah, the intertwinement is pretty precarious, which I think is kind of
problematic. Yeah.
I didn't even realize it was an anthology. Because I when I don't know anything about a thing, I just watch it. And so right. I just click play. And it was just like, how is all of this shit going to tie together? You're doing a lot of character development in all these different scenarios that seem totally unrelated. Oh.
See, I know, like, it was an anthology, and I was like, wait, they just cut to a different scene. So I had the opposite experience of you, where I was like, how are they still going to... What? I guess it's not an anthology. I'm like, well, no, it is, sort of.
Yeah, and see, things... And I'm guessing from the way you're talking about it, like, not good for you.
No.
And I thought that was one of the few really cool parts of this movie. Because I didn't like this movie. But I thought that was interesting, because so often anthologies, and we've done plenty of them, and I'm sure we'll do more. And often we find ourselves not digging them too hard because usually the wraparound sucks and you get like one good segment out of four. I didn't particularly like any of this, but I thought the way they presented it kept me engaged and kind of wondering what was going to pay off the whole time, as opposed to going, ugh, I don't like this short, and I know I'm in for the next 15 minutes of it. Because I wasn't sure where a lot of these things were going until the last, you know, 30 minutes of the movie, when you can kind of see where, oh, okay, we've gotten the, once Act 2 finishes per scenario, which is probably, you know, with 30 to 40 minutes remaining, you go, oh shit, this is a changeling story, this is a whatever story. And it's like, okay, now I go, oh, okay, now all this makes more sense. But whether or not those succeeded as individual segments is, you know, up for taste and debate. But it made me watch each of them trying to figure out what was going on, wondering which one I would care about more. I liked the suspense that added on a meta level, I guess.
On a meta level, but it makes it so none of the stories get to build their own tension and suspense because you're always getting yanked into the next one. Yeah. And for me, it was that. It was like, oh shit, okay, so there's a weird thing going on in the school and they're locked in the basement and there was a changeling kid and he was the...
Okay. See, I would wonder if, like, as a writer for this, are you told that's how they're planning on shooting it? And do you write differently? So that you've got little, like, 3-minute vignettes with mini cliffhangers, if you choose to have them? Or did you write a short and then found out, oh cool, all the tension I was putting in, or the dread, or the whatever, is wasted because like the reveal doesn't happen when it should after 2 minutes of quiet whatever. You know what I mean? Like it'd be interesting to know how that comes together.
It really played a couple of them at least really played the latter for me. That it was much more this wasn't intended to be cut like this and it is and that's unfortunate.
Where do you fall on that scale there, Charlie?
I see what you're saying, but I mean I would also throw into the mix that, you know, the issue of whether or not it works for you as far as the tension parts of whatever else, I would say on a purely technical level, however, like the editing is awfully damn good. Like for something that's very indie kind of deal, like that was something that impressed me was that it is very well from a technical standpoint, like the editing is really strong.
The editing between stories?
Yeah, it's not clunky at all. There's no chop stops and stuff. And like, cause I mean, it's one of those things. Editing is a weird deal. Like more times I talk to movie people and film people, and whatever. Like, it's like, you don't realize, like, let's just say the different way. It's hard to notice when editing is good until you watch like really bad editing. And it's just like,
good editing is like the biggest unsung hero.
Invisible. Yeah. You know, it's just like, it just doesn't really. And so like, and maybe I'm just not wording it really well, but there was something about the way that they intercut between them that like didn't feel like kind of like star wipe. You know,
We're not maligning Star Wipes, right?
Well, no, I'm not. I'm just saying, like, it's just.
I just want to be clear because I don't want to. I'm going to have to deal with the barrage of email if we start saying Star Wipes are somehow not awesome.
Dude, everybody loves Star Wars toilet paper. It's fine.
Pardon me.
But I like just, that I've rendered you speechless twice.
I hate you so much. And I'm literally now, like, that's the game. And I'm like, I gotta start reeling in the expressions because I'm just feeding the troll now.
Well, and see, and I mean, so like, the other overarching thing with this one that I think is important is that, and I mentioned this before we started recording, but I think it's actually a very important part of this, is that this is a mean, bleak thing. Like, this is not like, you watch Krampus, Brad Dourif's Krampus, which we probably mention a lot because how great it is. But like, there is a hope there. There is a life to it. There's relatable parts and there's a real heartbeat to it. And this, like, and it manifests itself in ways that I think don't work. Particularly with the family, with the Krampus family, that particular story. Cause they're just foul. But it's sort of like, this is just, it's very, very bleak. And there's no real release valve. Like, for example, the culmination of the Santa story. It's kind of a cool idea in a way, in a lot of respects, but it's also like, you know, it doesn't feel comical in the kind of blackly comic way when the cops shoot the Santa in the mall thing. Like it doesn't feel kind of like funny or like, ah, look at that. You know, it's more just like, yeah, fuck.
All right. Well, let's take a quick second to just because I think we're about to get into the meat of like some of the stories proper, and we should kind of outline a little bit of what this is. So like we said, this is an anthology where everything's kind of intercut, but you have four stories and a wraparound that exists throughout. The wraparound is William Muffucking Shatner is a DJ.
Oh, golly.
cashing that check.
Just the fact that there's any portion of that studio that was still recognizable as a studio because of how much it had been chewed on was astounding to me. I loved every moment he was on screen in this movie. Huh. I'm a fucking Shatner mark. But, William Shatner's a DJ, and he's the guy that's just kind of this weird, like, I love Christmas, is basically his job. You have a story where three kids they sneak into their school during Christmas break to shoot a documentary for like a media class they're in about some murders that happened a year ago. And then you've got a story about a dude and his family who go to the woods to cut down a Christmas tree illegally that they bring home instead of their own child, a changeling. You've got, the family with the Krampus story where right. There's just a bunch of shitheads and, Krampus shows up to punish them. And then you've got Santa in the North Pole whose elves become mean zombies.
Mm-hmm.
Basically. Yeah, they call them a cuntalot and eat each other. Yeah. Zombie Tourette's basically. And, that's kind of the gist of it. Right. And so like the only story that kind of worked for me was the wraparound. I really, really enjoyed Shatner trying to have a Merry Christmas and failing and getting a little bit drunker and a little bit drunker and then having to report on shit going south at the mall, but without right. any details. And up until the very end of the movie, my thing I was going to walk away from this with was most of this was kind of eh, but fucking ballsy move to have this weird, horrible thing happening out there in town somewhere that you're never going to show us.
Yeah, if they did just Pontypooled it.
That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
And when you find out how that connects and becomes a thing, I was like, fuck, that's not as good.
Mm-hmm.
That is just not as good as, you know, Shatner's like second to last thing is like, we're still have unclear reports about what's going on at the mall. We do know there are a number of hostages. Please stay home. Hug your loved ones tight. We don't know what's going on. We'll give you more information when we have it, but just stay away from it. It's very Welcome to Night Vale type thing.
Yeah.
And I was loving that. And then at the very end, when they put all those cards on the table, I was like, fuck. Like, you dumbed it down.
Because
and that didn't work. But up until that point, that was the coolest part. Yeah. The other segments never really clicked with me.
I liked the changeling segment. I thought that story was pretty compelling, and it had a couple nice creepy moments. The kids in the, like the story with the kids in the, locked in the school, pretty decent, but the characters were awful.
Also, I as soon as they gave the premise of what they're doing, which is, we're gonna go film a documentary for our class in the school by stealing keys from someone going in when the school is closed during winter break and all that. I'm like, how are you going to turn this assignment in?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you doing?
I think that's the least of the troubles of
but
that.
But the thing is, like, that's the first thing that happens is right. like, we're going to break into the school to film a documentary about the school where you are not allowed to go. And I went, that's insane. Kids get in trouble for shit they post on Facebook. You're going to turn it in as a class project. You're all morons. I hate you all for being too stupid to live. I guess I'll watch this now. And like that just, I hated them from the moment they were on screen.
Yeah.
And then it turns out that didn't pan out very well for me.
And the family, they're just hard to live with. And you don't get
enough. They retcon that to being part of the plot.
Right.
But it's.
They could have, that's one that could have benefited from being blown out to like a Tales from the Crypt episode length.
Yeah.
because you would get a little more backstory with the aunt and a little more backstory with dad, and it wouldn't just be his little confessional at the end where everyone tells why they're shitty, you know. The Santa one bummed me out, and I'm sure you can guess why, but...
Because it was terrible?
Yeah, well, the reveal at the end, where I was like, yeah, okay, like, that's a funny way to bring this home and ground it, but at the same time...
Oh, the reveal is that one of the guys working at the station that got sent down to the mall to do an in-store appearance for, like, a food drive hates Christmas and has gone bonkers, and is now just slaughtering people because thinking they're evil elves.
Crazy, he thinks he's at the North Pole and he's Santa and all that shit. So less interesting to me than Santa dealing with a zombie elf outbreak, and I really wanted them to play that straight the entire way through.
I did too, yeah.
So, like, you introduce this badass warrior Santa, and then the best you can do is wah wah. He's crazy.
Where do you land on the various stories there, Charlie?
I a little differently. One thing I did want to point out at the very beginning was when we started the North Pole. I did like the zoom in of the North Pole, which is like, I wrote my notes as a zoom in on a PlayStation 2 Castlevania level. Cause I was like, man, that graphic is not the best. Oh, golly.
I really want to play Castlevania now.
But
that's not the point you were making. I said, I really want to play Castlevania now.
Oh. Except for he's like this like weird emo Japanese thing now. It's, I don't know, it's whatever. But, have you seen the most recent Castlevania on PS4? It's like, dude,
it's been a while.
Just get some sun and stop being so mopey. So I thought that was kind of funny. I was like, oh my gosh. So the family, the Krampus one, like, I keep going back to Doherty's Krampus, but it's like, you know, when you have Keckner and then Adam Scott and everybody, there's enough of a glimmer in there, especially the little boy and all that kind of stuff, where there's parts that you can grip onto, and they do really kind of evolve into caring for each other and trying to figure it out together and helping each other. There's an arc that happens there. Whereas this bunch, like, you know, sister does get there, like where she just kind of, the thing with the aunt where she says like she wasn't angry, she was scared. And like, and this, that, whatever else. And like, you know, daughter is kind of the catalyst there. You know, the husband thing about the wanting to, you know, make the wife happy so she doesn't leave kind of thing. It's like, it's not nearly, to me, that's not as interesting as the daughter's kind of thing, like kind of really realizing for the forest for the trees. The crew in the basement, like, it's 6-1. I mean, you know, there's 1,000 of them we're going to go film at a thing. I think it's kind of funny, Matt, that the thing that you clicked onto was the thing about they're not supposed to be in the school, whatever else, and they're going to turn it as a project. Like, I was just thinking, like, yeah, but if you get proof of the paranormal on film, like, I think you don't have to worry about getting your degree at that point. I think you're in pretty good shape for the other stuff.
Sure. Although I don't think they went there for proof of the paranormal.
No,
right?
Not necessarily.
Because no one knew what happened. So like, had they been able to do that, yeah, that's one thing. But like, they went there to go, there's an unsolved murder.
Well, that's kind of the thing.
They keep talking about
how
the murder is still at large.
Yeah.
Well, what you said just then, that's a very good observation because, like, they don't write that part of it out very well. Because, like, I would have liked for the three characters that go down there to be really bitter about being lied to or being really frustrated about it being covered up or swept under the rug or whatever. Like, really play that part of it up, like, you know, make it so there's a personal investment beyond just, you know, the practicality of making a thing. Because you're right, because then it just falls apart. If there's something personal there, that's different.
I mean, as a guy who took media classes in high school and filmed things in the school when the school was closed because my dad taught at the school so I could get in, I had to answer questions like, how the hell did you get this footage in the teacher's lounge? Yeah. Like, what the shit? You know, and it's like, oh, well, my dad let me in. Oh, okay. But like, you know, and it's, I don't know, that...
Well, and the other problem
that segment
with the
just
Krampus
troubled me with how shitty a lot of the logic was.
Well, and the thing, here's the bits of that one though, is that there is some technical stuff that they do in there that was kind of nifty. Especially like when she's going down the hall, or they're both going down the hall, and she looks into the one delivery room, and the guy doesn't see anything, and she looks in there, and it's two nuns with the lady, with blood everywhere, and the lady scowls and all this stuff. It's like, ah, this is creepy. This is a creepy ass shit. So there is some cool stuff going on there. Young lady is doing her absolute level best to be a possessed evil thing. But I mean, she's about starting as a bunny rabbit. So it's sort of like that didn't, I mean, no offense to the young lady, but it was just sort of like, you can't hang your hat on that, which we'll get into more later in another movie. But, it's like, that was kind of a toughie. The Santa stuff, all the stuff up at the North Pole, I'm kind of with Josh as far as that goes. Like, it is pretty rad to watch, like, avenging badass Santa Claus, like, decapitate a bunch of, like, evil zombie elves. That's rad. Like, just in and of itself, that's super cool. You know, the reveal out to the mall part of it, it's kind of clever, I guess. The thing with the changeling, like, that one I struggle with a little bit, probably more so than the other ones, just because, like, you have dad who was the cop at the scene at the school, and then he's on leave and stuff, and, like, they seem to imply that he wasn't really around after the incident and stuff, and then now he's kind of back at the house or whatever, or maybe they were separated.
But he's, like, super violent?
Yeah, and it's, like, they don't really...
I feel like there were a lot of layers that were getting shoehorned into that did not deserve to be there.
Yeah, 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 and that's kind of the thing with that one, like... I struggle with that one because it, and to say it in a slightly insensitive way, like, it seems to be just sort of like, asshole dad with short fuse and sort of like put upon mom is the framework. And I don't think that that's what they're going for, but that's the way it comes across, which is a little bit aggravating because mom is super fast to just be like crazy defensive and just like super, super hyper protective. And it's like, that's not motivated by any data that they tell us. And so it's kind of like, it's a bummer.
To me, I thought mom was maybe the only sympathetic character in this entire movie.
Well, when it's all said and done, I totally agree with you. But I think you're right. I bristle because I'm just like, fucking dial it back, lady. Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
later on, I think it kind of fills in. Of course, you're right, Joshua. But
everyone's at 11. Ooh. You're right. Dad's at 11. Mom's at 11.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like no one has a human conversation in this entire movie. You know, and I think the changeling one with, you know, like, that to me is like, fuck, you could make this good. You would just have to, you know, you could make this into like you said, a Tales from the Crypt episode or maybe even a feature. Like, there's some creepy shit there, you know? But you'd have to have actual people as your characters, you know, and not have a bunch of like, well, how do we make it have more melodrama? I don't know. Dad's maybe alcoholic that wants to beat the kid whenever he's given an opportunity. Why? Shut up. Oh, okay. Like, all right.
Oh, I haven't thought about it that
like,
way.
Well, if mom is like concerned that at any moment dad's going to beat the hell out of the kid with a fucking belt, why is mom got dad in the room, period? Like, there's a lot going on that is just has no rational justification to me in this. And it's like, but the idea of family, a horrible tragedy befalls them. Like, they get lost in the woods for a minute, and their kid is not normal when he comes home. That's a movie. That's a movie I'd watch.
It has some creepy moments in that.
You know?
Yeah, there are definitely.
But like, it just they blow it with so much that you know that shit is so heavy handed. But it bums me out because like that was the one I was like, fuck, that would be the portion of this anthology that I would like to see made into a good movie. Mm-hmm. You know, but it doesn't. So
the thing about the Santa one is the awesome part that I really liked. Did not belong in this movie.
No.
But then grounding it made it belong in the movie, but made it a shittier story.
Yep.
So it seemed like one of those where, like, I have this awesome idea for Santa fighting elves. Like, well, okay, but that doesn't really fit with our anthology. Can we, like, can he just be, like, the weatherman from the beginning?
Could
we'll do, like, a wraparound? Like,
mid-90s Liefeld it up a bit.
it just kind of smells like the short that this guy brought to the table didn't quite fit, so they kind of cobbled that ending together to ground
I'd be curious
it.
To see if that's the case.
I don't know if that's the case.
But it would be fascinating, though, because I could see that being the case. Yeah. That's an interesting thought.
This movie takes place in Bailey Downs, where all the events of Ginger Snaps took place.
Oh!
So that's pretty good.
Shit, I didn't make that connection.
Yeah, the couple of the dudes worked on Ginger Snaps 2. And three, so they chose that as the setting.
That's fun.
So that was neat. Oh, so that name rings a faint and distant bell. Why? Like, oh, Cool.
That's awesome. Do we have anything else we need to say about this one as far as like the actual film itself, or should we kind
of... One other thing I wanted to point out about the kids in the basement one was that they switched between first and third person, which was, in my mind, really good decision.
Yeah, because, thank God they didn't do found footage all the way through.
You know, because that was like, because to me, in those segments, it did make it the tension a little higher.
It worked, yeah.
You could because what you have is you have from the camera or from the phone's perspective, you have that like swoop, something, whatever's going to pop into the viewfinder, it's like, oh shit, that kind of thing. But then when you come out of that in a third person, then you can see everything lit and see the environment and stuff. And I thought that was really smart. I thought that was a very, very, smart decision to move it between, first and third. I thought that was a nifty little,
Yeah, that's
also the thing when he's got on the camera and he goes by the mannequin and it's like lady face. And then he goes, huh? He looks up from the viewfinder and then it's just like mannequin face. Like that was great. I thought that was a nifty
That's a good reminder because that was the thing that had occurred to me too. Was there was a point where I went, man, I'm glad this isn't all found footage.
Yeah.
You know, like I had that moment, but then I was able to enjoy the bits that I thought they did effectively, which, again, like, you can do a partial found footage movie and that can be.
I would love to see more people go for that rather than the full.
When it's contextual. Yeah,
just kind of cut in and out of it. I like that idea of the, like, girl forced to abort her baby is now, you know, dies and the process is now just looking to get somebody knocked up.
Yeah.
And that ties into the Christmas thing kind of neatly. Like, the whole structure of that is so cool, but the people.
The execution's not it for there. Me. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, that's what I mean. Like, I think whoever was, I mean, I'd have to do some poking around and I ain't got the time or energy, but, I would be interested to see if like different people shot different things or how they really delegated out the work. But to me,
there are three directors credited for this movie. So
well, out of the four things and then the wraparound thing, there seems to be really solid technical ideas going on in that basement one, you know, in terms of like some of these little bits of business. And that's very promising. I think that's kind of a nifty thing. There's many, many other things about why it doesn't really click on the overall, but to me, that's the kind of stuff that makes me go, oh, cool. Like it makes you sit up and kind of pay attention. Like, oh, neat. That's really kind of cool that they went after that kind of a thing. I mean, it's sort of, it's like thinking about Trick or Treat and you can almost taste how it looks. Like it has such a density. Everything about what he does in his movies, like it has a feeling that you really latch onto. And a lot of times with this type of stuff, when there's a lot more effort than maybe budget or overall skill team wide, you know, is that like there's a lot of shortcomings and stuff, but there are those moments you go, oh man, that's your meat right there. Like you had, that was good. And so it's like, that's my feeling. Well, that's why I walk away from this is that it's just like, there's way too much effort for me to dismiss it as just garbage. You know, but at the same time, I sort of like, tonally speaking, humor wise, character writing wise, and all that kind of stuff, like, there just seems to be so little done right in those areas that when you get to the end of it, you're not like, yay! It's more like, oh, I'm done.
So what's your number there, Charles?
This is my feeling. I will say, I don't know. I think I like this quite a bit more than y'all did. So, I'm going to say 5.5. I'm going to say 5.5. 5.5. No, take that back. 5. 5 out of 10. 5 out of 10 eggnogs on the fire, making the house smell funky.
Ah, yes. Dairy and open flame. A classic. Yeah. Tale as old as time. I appreciated that, like, this film seemed to have budget and competent people behind the look of it, but I felt like the writing and acting were its weak points. This is tedious. Like, I remember at one point pausing the film to go, I forget if I was like, oh, I think I had a pizza in the oven, like the timer went off. Mm. And so I like paused it and Megan went, oh my God, we're only 30 minutes in. And I was like, exactly how I feel. Like, we got a ways to go. So it was, Yeah, we, like I said, we were impressed with the way they did the anthology as opposed to the 100%, you know, disparate segments, which, and I get it, like, you know, your mileage may vary based on the film and how much you like the segments or how you think they're playing out, because I absolutely love that in Trick or Treat. This movie's not a good movie, but I still liked that move. Maybe just because it's different at this point. I don't know. But this was not fun to watch. Like, you know, I think anything that was good about it I mentioned, so I would caution against watching this. So this is like a 2.5 out of 10 Tourette's zombie elves. Yeah.
That moment when the elf hits himself with the hammer. With the axe.
It's pretty dope.
It's kind of great. Just the, like, shiny.
Like, the fuck?
Don't you want any cookies shiny? You love cookies.
Nope.
Like, this is why, like, in retrospect, it's like, why would you give me that story and then take it away? Mm-hmm. That's such a fun story. Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, I found the cutting between the stories it reminded me a lot of Tale of Tales.
Mm.
Where it was like, well, why are you cutting now? And why are you making this, harder to follow intentionally? And what's the motivation behind these cuts? And how are these stories informing each other? And if they're not, then why are we cutting back and forth in between them? And why are we cutting at those points? And I don't think there's a good answer to any of those questions. So, overall, I mean, even if you kind of unwind it and play it in sequence, I don't think anything really succeeds here.
God, if someone did a supercut where they put all these things together, seeing if the editing suddenly is insanely jarring from where they cut because they have to cut to intersperse things, it'd be really fascinating to watch these segments straight through. Yeah, someone with more time than me
attempt that.
I would watch that. That would be very fascinating.
By attempt it, I mean watch it, not do it. For yeah. Sure. But, and I thought Shatner didn't really have a reason to be there and wasn't really bringing his best shat. So, for me, this is definitely like the mayonnaise sandwich lacking even the tangy zip of Miracle Whip. So, I would give it a 5 out of 10, a 4 unto us a child is born, 4 unto us a son is
given. Much higher score than I thought you were going to give that.
Yeah.
Let's take a break.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be back with our other two films. I know we're all just kind of falling head first onto desks here, but I'm here. You're here. We're all here. It's happening. Nobody said it wasn't happening. I believe it's happening. What? I'm full of snot.
Everything's fine. We're fine down here. How are you? I don't know what we're doing anymore. I'm trying to think of other awkward moments from anything Ben Stiller's ever said.
That was the Academy Award nominated film, Everything Ben Stiller's Ever Said. It's very, like a Merchant Ivory production. It's beautiful.
Is it directed by Werner Herzog?
Yeah, weird.
Not really.
Big, long extended sequences of like just out of focus landscaping. What's going on?
I especially liked Klaus Kinski as Jennifer Aniston.
I thought you said out of focus lens capping, and I was like, that's amazing. Werner Herzog leaves the lens cap on. We show it to you in its original uncut format as the director intended, or didn't, as the case may be. It's just a bunch of dialogue and him yelling at extras. Oh, fuck, that'd be awesome. Oh, I know what my next Fringe show is.
Werner Herzog's lens capping.
Blindfolds for the audience as they walk in. It'd be amazing.
Be beautiful.
The fringiest thing that's ever fringed.
Maybe instead you could do P2 the musical. Because all you gotta do is put the musical on.
Okay, hang on. You get about an hour, 50 minutes realistically, which gives you, I think, time for 5 songs. So P2 the musical has I'm Too Busy for a Life. I'm Too Busy for Life. I Hope She Notices Me. Damn, look at all my newfound cleavage. Surprising gore.
Yeah, well, there's the like the dance number where he beats the shit out of the dude with the flashlight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, surprising gore, and then...
I Just Want to Be Your Friend.
I Just Want to Be Your I Just Want to Be Your Friend / Nearly Rescued Ad Nauseam / look at my newfound cleavage reprise. And I think that's your fringe fact. If you do that show, I get 10%, should we say?
Of all the lucrative monies that
TM. I own it. So anyway.
I guess the bumbling cops would have to have like a little soft shoe number.
There would be a lot more. They'd be your backup dancers.
Yeah.
Oh, also a bunch of people dressed like Rottweilers.
Yeah, so P2 is a movie about a woman who gets kidnapped on Christmas Eve by the parking lot attendant / security guy at the building where she works.
And his big old eyeballs.
Yeah, his Wes Bentley-ness.
I forgot about that guy.
Yeah, because he is the most beautiful thing she is the most beautiful thing he's ever seen.
It actually makes a lot more sense when it's her and not a plastic bag.
That's true.
So.
Well, you know, the other thing too with that, is you know what they avoided? Any situation where it's like, oh, he went to her high school, or, oh, they hooked up at a bar one time, or whatever the fuck. Like, there was no back anything. And it was just like, thank you, for God's sakes.
Yeah, it is
the no hand-waving explanation.
It is solely he sees her a lot in the parking garage, so he thinks that he has a right to own
her.
Like,
he knows her, and yeah. She somehow owes him something. Yeah,
and he wants to save her from being, like, a bad girl and give her a beautiful, pure life with him somehow.
Yeah. It's very red pill.
Yeah, the first thing that he does, this nice guy, TM, is... roofie or like knock her unconscious and strip her to her underwear and put her in a Marilyn Monroe dress, basically.
It's like a slipper, like a nighty thing, isn't it?
Deeply problematic.
Well, I mean, I thought it was actually a dress. I thought it was just like a very like ooh la la level of dress that like I do not think she had with her.
No.
So
he procured that dress.
Yeah.
I mean, I call this on Facebook Cleavage the Movie, and I don't mean to say that in a like, hey, check out the cans on that lady kind of way. Just that her cleavage pretty much has a supporting actor role in this. No pun intended.
The bra does.
Yeah, there you go, Charlie. And I've never seen this before. I remember trailers for this and me going, yeah. What a stupid idea for a movie. How do you make someone trapped in a parking garage scary? It's a parking garage. Just leave. And like, okay. Like,
turns out she can't leave.
I get it now. Like, because the thing is, like, theoretically, if in the building I'm in right now, where I have underground parking, if someone disabled the door, yeah, you would just be trapped there. Like, okay, it would actually be pretty simple, I would imagine. Like, if you take off the thing that's like the emergency pull that every garage door has, mm-hmm. and you cut power, then okay, no one can get in or out of the garage. All right, fine. Well played, movie. You thought of one thing. I remember just thinking that when I saw it and then knew nothing really about it. And then watching it just was gobsmacked with the idea, like, good Lord, this is the most, like, front and center tits I've seen in a movie, including things like Piranha 3D, where there are actual bare tits.
Yeah.
And I was like, and somehow that is less tawdry.
Charlie and I both have the same insane visual right now.
Yeah. It's just sort of like,
it's like it just like, comes out of the woods like, and stands up and
well, I was thinking like, I'm roars, thinking
you know,
shot,
holding
like,
a salmon
and there's like what, six? I don't know. I don't know how bears work.
Well, I was just thinking, like, Ving Rhames, like, cruising by on a little jet ski, looking over, like, oh, every time, every year with the bear stage. It's just like, oh, God.
And then after that, the bear distracts everyone with his sweet bear tits, steals a picnic basket, and off it goes till next spring break.
Yeah, boo-boo.
But no, it is kind of fascinating that for a movie that is desperately shoving as much cleavage into the film as it can, it also doesn't have a nude scene.
No.
And doesn't even get rapey aside from that little video clip, which even that is pretty dialed back. Like, it's a weird kind of trying to have it both ways.
It's exploitative thing. In a
PG
way.
Yeah.
Because there are times when she is framed from the neck to the belly button.
Yes.
Like, extended scenes.
They are very much wanting to make sure, like, BT Dubs, have you seen her cans?
Yeah. Does she have a head? We're not sure. Feldman 11.
Does she have anything interesting to say? Possibly. We weren't paying attention either. Check out this rack. You know, like, have you seen the snack trays on the actress here? Like, we're gonna, you know, like, it is the married with children of horror movies. Like, it is distracting.
Yeah. And at the same time, she is kind of kicking ass. I mean, she spends
like
a little
her.
Too much time shrinking Violet for me, but then when she gets into it, she gets down into it.
She's a pretty good
fighter. She kicks some ass.
Yeah.
It's like, she could have kicked some ass with a slightly higher neckline. Excuse me. Or she could have been topless. You know, going either way would have seemed weirdly more wholesome to
me.
We
wouldn't be talking about it if it had gone hard either direction. We'd mention it, but we would not have spent 5 minutes talking about it because it is so bizarre.
Well, the other thing about that, too, I mean, this is, again, one of those situations this week where, like, I'm surprised at the things that they've noted you guys latch on to, because, like, I mean, I don't disagree at all that, like, that's a big part of it, but at the same time, like, I mean, because it doesn't get all rapey and too sexually as far as that kind of stuff goes, whatever, to me, putting her in that kind of low cut dress or the evening dress or kind of the slippy gowny, whatever kind of thing, like, plays perfectly into that, like, keeping the princess at an arm's reach, whatever else, because she's really just too perfect. All she needs to do is be saved, kind of narrative in his own head. Like, that kind of fits it. You know, it's like, I was thinking about that movie, just Disappearance of Alice Creed with my would-be girlfriend, Gemma Arterton, in it. And it's like, homegirl is naked for most of that thing. And it's like, it's almost grating. Which sounds like a weird word to use, but it's like, in a lot of those scenes, you're just like, well, why? That's stupid. Like, it's not motivated by what the story they're telling you. And, like, in this one, that kind of dress and all the rest of that kind of stuff, it kind of just plays with that kind of, like, weird princess fantasy he seems to have.
The thing is, Charlie, I agree with you. I do think that it makes perfect sense that he would have an evening gown / formal wear, you know, something like that for her to have his perfect thing that he's envisioned in his head. You know, like that, because of course he thinks what will happen is she will wake up chained to that table and go, my God, this dress is beautiful. The dinner you've prepared, it's amazing. And you are so charming.
It's
I don't need these chains anymore. We are going to be together forever. In fact, I'm going to quit my job and put a cot in this little guard shack because I can't bear the thought of not being in the room with you for even a moment. Please, when I shower, shower with me.
Yeah.
When I have to go to the bathroom, please, please come with me. Read to me while I poop. Like, you know, like, that is what he wants, right? So you're right. That makes perfect sense. You know, it's just that if they could have done that and given us that moment and then had her deal with it by finding a fucking hoodie, you know, that would have maybe made the movie a bit more relatable for our protagonist. Although I love the dieharding of her feet where she's stuck barefoot the whole movie. I really like that because the wet smack of bare feet on concrete it's super, super smart. That's a brilliant move on their part. But I just think you could have done that, shown that, gotten that, and then moved on to something that isn't so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't, that's kind of where I land on.
I mean, again, I just like, I mean, you know, he didn't put her in the outfit that Barbara's wearing in the Beyond, which is the one where she like has a, she finds
that's
a crazy bondage outfit. She's like, yeah, I'll put this on.
That's the Beyond.
Yeah. He didn't put her in that.
No, it's not about the outfit that he put her in. It's just, it is an outfit that the filmmakers put her in that has like half of her tits exposed. And then it's the decision to shoot her from tit level for 80% of the movie.
I mean, this is a movie where I'm like, woof, like kind of definition of male gaze for a camera in a lot of parts.
And it's weird because I'm a person who is a fan of nudity. I'm a fan of boobs.
Yeah, for sure.
And it was a little jarring to me just because it, It's not that kind of movie.
No, it's not. And that's the thing. It's like, if I'm noticing it, it must be egregious. Like, I am perfectly willing to be like, I've got enough of the caveman in me to be like, nice. But this was like, dude, like, even I want to, like, have, like, a peanut butter sandwich sometimes instead of watching Pornhub.
Like, you know, like that. I believe you mean internet porn. Have you listened to The Butterfly Effect yet? Because it's all about Pornhub. An internet pawn.
That's a really good John Ronson, Joshua.
He really got in my head.
That's the thing. Like, I guess the takeaway here is, like, I'm not wagging fingers saying that y'all are wrong or that, like, oh, whatever, not like that. It's just sort of, I find it interesting. Cause, like, there are other things, there are definitely shit tons of other stuff where it's kind of go, oi. And or they just think strike you different ways. I just think it's interesting that kind of really stuck out to y'all in such a way. And it was more just sort of like plot relevant. I was like, okay, all right, on the next thing. You know, it's like, so I just think it's interesting.
I'm going to point out that I can only hope a listener will agree that it is interesting because that is all we're trying to do. So,
yeah, that is true.
Sweet. It is, I got to admit. It is way more fun when we don't agree on everything for the average listener.
Oh, we'll get that for the next time. Next movie.
Yeah. That said, though, aside from boobs, this movie, the thing that just really shocked me was the insane amount of gore when they kill overly amorous, drunken Christmas party coworker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was
Jesus fuck. I was like, this is from a different movie. I'm like, wait, no, it's not, because this is the first thing we've seen.
Well, and also, you know who we're dealing with here is Aja and Kafun.
Which then, of course, made perfect sense. But like, oh my God, because the thing is, I don't remember any indication of that in the trailer from, you know, 20 years ago. But I can see a lot of people going, oh, like a taut thriller. And they're going, what the fuck? When a dude's intestines are hanging out of his stomach because he's been rammed by a car a couple times, and you go, that's a graphic death. Oh, he's blinking. He's not dead yet. Oh,
right. They have to get.
We're gonna finish him. Mm-hmm. Oh, Jesus! Like, my God! Like it. I'm a gore hound. That's awesome. Like, and it's done very well. And honestly, I think is done for the right reasons in a movie like this that isn't overtly about that. Of just like the, it's meant to be shocking and brutal because that's what she's being forced to confront. And it's horrifying to her, just like it is to the audience, because it is kind of out of nowhere. Even just the beating with the flashlight is grim as shit. There is no joy or fun in the violence in this movie, where, you know, dude gets belted with the flashlight a few times and, you know, his face is all bloody, which you'd expect from any horror movie. But like the fact that he's got that cut on his forehead where you can see bone.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's too real. It's not fun. It's too real. Whoa. And you think, that's pretty graphic. Good job, movie. And then it goes to 11. And not in a silly Rob Zombie way, you know, or in, even in all the good movies that have, graphic violence and gore that go to 11 that can be very fun, you know, and it's just like, fuck me. This is unpleasant. But holy shit, do I appreciate it. So. That was an unexpected delight for me, based on like the shit I like in horror movies. I'd be curious to see, you know, weigh in on Facebook or whatnot, listeners, if you feel the same, because I could also see people going, that doesn't fit here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it works, but that might be because of the fact that I generally enjoy gory movies anyway. But I could see people that were like, fuck, I would love this movie if that wasn't so fucking over the top.
Hmm.
But I don't know. What do you think, guys?
I think that apart from that gore moment, and like, this isn't like a stellar example of this genre. It is just an example of it. Like, she's pretty great. Bentley is off the rails. He's pretty awful in this. But this was, IMDb informs me this was in the middle of his like year of heroin addiction, where he was taking acting jobs to pay the bills, so that explains a lot of the screaming and, you know, weirdness. There were times when I was kind of biting my nails for her, and there were times when I was kind of chuckling at how ridiculous Bentley is. So
he is rarely menacing. He's doing menacing things.
He's rarely creepy, which that's is the weird because he's so creepy in American Beauty, and he's supposed to be a sympathetic character in that.
Charlie.
Oh, well, yeah, I just sort of...
Oh, sorry, sorry, we lost you. But yeah, I was curious to see where you land on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's... I kind of wrestled a little bit because I think it's a tricky character to... Because we've seen plenty of ones where, you know, you have somebody who's supposed to be like, I am wearing my normal suit, but actually underneath I'm a gunny sack of creepy, you know, like when I'm wearing my human costume type of stuff. To varying degrees of success, you know, sometimes they work real well, sometimes they don't work at all. I mean, to me, he's kind of in the middle of the road. I mean, it's like, I don't think he was like actively terrible, but it's sort of like, there are other scenes where you're just like, man, if you had some menace with a good goddamn, I would have made a lot better. Although that scene where they are smushing the guy, in the parking garage bit, when he's like looking back over at her and then like when he's like making the car go forward and back, whatever, like, that was kind of a little creepy. That was a little, that's super much. In terms of mechanics of it, the water hose down to the elevator is a stroke of brilliance.
I really liked that. That was unexpected.
God, that was
as fuck.
Cool idea. Yeah. God, that was a cool idea. Cause he doesn't crawl down the thing. Cause that's a far drop. That's dangerous. You know, all this kind of stuff. But like, what can you do to really kind of, you know, flush somebody out? Like, well, I mean, it's great. That's a really cool bit of mechanics. I thought that was quite nifty.
That to me is indicative of a lot of what he's doing, which while his performance isn't up to it, his character has an upper hand that is so upper she can barely see it. Mm-hmm. And he knows he has no reason to risk that. So he does everything methodically and deliberately and slowly. All right, we got time. Like, you're in an elevator. I'm not going to go like bang on the door and try to pry it open with a crowbar, you know, crawl down the little thing and try to break into the room. He's like, I can sit here and think for a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, I got an idea. All right.
Yeah.
And then,
that's what I mean.
You know,
just grab the other security
and just
dead ass body in there.
Yeah. Just to fuck with you. And like, okay. Yeah. I'm not sure where you are, but I know that the gate's locked, you know, to get out. So you ain't going anywhere. That's good. My dog will go for a walk. We'll find you. And like, that's all you need. You know, the character he's playing, I think, is very cogent in his ideas of how to approach this, despite it being, I think, essentially improvisational. Like, he didn't intend for a night like this, but he clearly, on some level in the back of his mind, had contingencies, or at least knew the situation was not going to have options for her. And so, therefore, he's not worried from the start. You know, he seems very confident. He's the Pepe Le Pew in this. You know, I can go kaboink, 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 and chase the cat racing away.
I feel like he had this plan.
Also rapey.
Yeah. I've heard that there have been several credible allegations, yes.
Another hero, just tarnished forever.
I can't even watch that anymore. I have bad news for you about Speedy Gonzalez, too.
There's a wall now.
History of abuse.
Oh, okay.
Really sad. What was I thinking? I feel like he had this plan that he was just kind of waiting to pull the trigger on. I don't know if it was necessarily going to be that night. It was just going to be whatever night she stayed later than anybody else.
Although
But then it kind of had to be that night because they were shutting down
for
a
holiday.
Week.
Yeah. And that was the thing. That was, because when we were watching this, you know, Megan brought up, okay, if you're the kooky antagonist in a movie like this, it just seems like there's a lot of waiting around for the exact right opportunity to do this stuff. I'm like, I think by definition that it's what a kooky person does, you know, but that is the thing, is you need everyone to have gone home first. So he might have been planning on doing this for 6 years.
Yeah.
And this is the one time, you know, all the stars aligned for his purposes. Because that is the thing. It requires a lot of big asks to get there. Which I'll point out, there's a couple of wanky moments that they have to use to justify how things are so awful.
Mm-hmm.
The cell phone service makes perfect sense. I can barely get cell phone service in my goddamn apartment, much less the parking garage underneath.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had cell phone.
Yeah, so like that makes good sense. And you know, we're flip phone era. You know, networks aren't great. So like that is nice. They found a way that isn't shitty to cover that contingency. The only part that bums me out is the idea that there's like a building without an emergency exit. Because when she gets up in the lobby and calls the cab and the door won't open, mm-hmm. the idea that there's literally no way out of the building without a key, that's the only moment where I'm like, fuck you. Like, the idea that, because someone is going to get locked in there at some point.
Right.
It's just going to happen. There's too many people in a building that size that someone's going to be there that no one realizes is there. You can't just trap someone in a building because if it starts on fire, et cetera, there has to be an emergency exit. Whether or not she chooses to push the bar for a cab is fine, but that should be a thing she'd remember and go after, and he'd have to prevent her from getting to later. So, like, that's the only part that strained credulity to me, is that there's literally no way out of this building before there's an emergency.
I wonder if...
Buildings don't work that way. There are codes for such right. a thing. You know?
I could see the, like, she doesn't think to do it, especially when the cab is right there. She just hits the door.
The idea that she wouldn't want to hit an emergency exit and turn an alarm on and wait for the cops. I get that. But like that has to be in the building, you know? So like that's, you have to kind of get over that, but which they kind of deal with the whole elevator issue. Like that is what they're doing.
Right.
So like, I get it, but like, it just, she has that moment of like, come on.
There's nothing like, in stairwells in this really. Weirdly, I think
the only
to the elevator.
Yeah, the only implied stairwell is the one he had to have taken to get the hose to the elevator that she's in.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like some kind of like really insufferable indie band. Like, yeah, with the implied stairwell.
But you
like,
repeat yourself.
Go away. one scene that really gave me the willies was when he says the thing about like calling the family. You know, he brings up and he like names off three or four of her family members, which you can just hear in passing. If you see somebody every day and listen to their conversation, you're going to pick up things eventually, I would think, one way or the other. And he names off a couple of things that maybe you should call them. They're worried, you know, they might be worried or whatever. And as she's on the phone, he like goes behind her and like puts his hands around her neck, doesn't squeeze, but like puts his hands around her neck, like, oh, golly, that was cool.
That was creepy and gross.
Was really good. Yeah. That was one of the few times he truly pulled off what they were after. Because other times that he looks creepy.
Anything.
Yeah. The other times that I think, you know, there's a limited number of times I think he's being creepy, and they're almost all when he's silent. And that's simply because his physicality lends itself to that.
Yeah.
His acting in this did not. But that dude has those eyebrows for days. Mm-hmm. And like, it just, I want to believe him as this character based on some things that are just circumstances of birth. And had he been able to match any of that energy with his performance, this could have been a fucking rock star A plus creepy fuck all movie that we would have watched a long time ago. I'm still very glad we watched it because I really enjoyed this. But I think there's a reason this doesn't get bandied about in horror circles. And that's because it's just, he's not bringing his A game, man.
It's good, but not great. You know?
Yeah. Yada yada yada. Through many contrived circumstances, Chicky almost escapes like five times. Never quite, despite cops literally entering the parking ramp, which is both
I loved that though,
ridiculous and satisfying in the level
the
of
cops
shit.
Are not dumb.
No.
And nobody makes any dumb. Because
he tries to do
that.
The whole working late, right? Whew, Christmas Eve. And they're like, yeah, cool, let us in. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh wow, cops doing what a cop should do in this circumstance in a movie? You do know you're in a movie, don't you? Like, you should be like, sounds good. Sandwich, and drive away. Like,
like sandwich is like a verb.
Yeah, you know.
Just standing there sandwiching.
I was watching Hamtaro earlier this week, and whenever they eat, the characters just go crumb, crumb, crumb. And I've always liked that. But, you know, they're adults, so sandwich. Yeah. But, you know, so a million of those things, and then she gets the upper hand. She eventually kills the Rottweiler. By the way, slight aside, if you don't follow us on Instagram, you should. Megan posts interesting things there every couple days. But she posted something about P2, and then one of the various hashtags she used was Rottweiler, which got Horror Show Hot Dog's Instagram followed by like four or five dog things.
Oops.
Which we both went, That'll last 24 hours because they will see what we've done, what we've tagged them in. And if they don't, they'll look up the movie and realize, oh, it's a Rottweiler trying to kill someone.
And getting brutally
super pissed. So this happens like once a month. We'll post a thing and Megan will post a thing and she will just tag a bunch of shit that's related. And someone that has no business giving a fuck about our horror movie stuff will suddenly become a follower or like us, and you go, oh, all you saw was a word. You know, you've either got an algorithm doing this for you or someone who's just searching a certain set of terms. You're going to be unhappy when you find out what it is you're tacitly endorsing. And within 3 days, without fail, they're gone.
Yeah.
Like, so for every, let's say every month we get like 30 new followers, we lose 28. Because they instantly go, whoa, 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 what?
Yeah.
This is not what we thought. And then they're gone.
So. That was a little rough for me just because Rottweilers, I think, are adorable.
Oh, they're awesome, yeah.
And, like, I have a very fond memory of getting drunk at a house with a bunch of SCA people.
Mm.
And I was trying to get laid at the time. I failed miserably in that. But I passed out in this house, and they had this giant Rottweiler.
Oh, he was such a sweetheart. I love big dogs.
Yeah, and I watched him, like, pick up my friend Jim's hand, because Jim's sleeping on the couch, picks him up by the wrist. Jim is, like, a 250, 6'2 guy. And he's like, yeah, fuck off. Dog grabs his wrist, very gently drags him off the couch onto the floor. Does not break the skin, does not bruise him. But the dog's just like, it's time to play, get the fuck up. And has that much power.
Oh, that's like, awesome.
Oh, they're so sweet. But I can see how that would be terrifying if your tits were out, you know? And I don't want to sound gross about it because I wasn't going like, oh, tits.
Well, no, I think.
The whole time I was just like,
we have certainly done shows where there are boobs involved and we've been gross. But I do not think this is one. I think we're making a valid point about the movie.
I just felt bad for the actress and the, you know.
It could not have been fun or comfortable.
And when all of the sprinklers come on at the end, I felt bad for the character. It's like, okay, she's now freezing and wet and out into the New York December. Just walking down the street.
And hoping to start.
Yeah, it seems like, painful, doesn't it?
Black. Yeah.
It does.
God.
I do need to point out the thing that it was a race for which one of us would scream it aloud first. The first thing she walks past on the corner is a physical store selling audiobooks.
Yeah.
What the actual fuck?
It's Almond World all over again.
This movie came out 10 years ago. And we were just like, was that ever a thing? Maybe. Was it? No. And then both of us like looked longingly at our phones and laptops and we're like, I'm not curious enough. But it was like the thing she walks by very prominently is an audiobook store. And I was like, was there money from that? I don't know. I don't know. We should wrap on this one. Is there anything else we want to make sure we touch on this, or should we just put a number on it?
I think it's true that like this is more of a diehard situation than a rape revenge or any of that kind of grossness.
Yeah.
In the best possible way, I think.
And I like, you know, like people give Joss Whedon shit because, well, he writes strong female characters, but then they get the shit kicked out of him because he likes beating women. Like, no. He likes writing characters who are true heroes. Like, he doesn't pussyfoot around just because this character is female. Like, John McClane gets the shit kicked out of him in Die Hard. Buffy gets the shit kicked out of her on Buffy. And this girl gets the shit kicked out of her and gives as much of it back as she gets.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's great. Like, she's not protected by any kind of, you know, screenplay magic. She is in the thick of it just as surely as if she were, you know, an action hero.
Yeah, she is appropriately unprepared for the assault that she has to deal with for the duration of this film and does her best. Like, that. All that makes sense. Like, we've watched movies, and I think at least once, each of us has been like, I think this film just hates women.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and like, I never got that vibe from this. Like, I don't think that's what's happening here. And, you know, dear listeners, let us know if you have a different opinion. But, like, this is one where I think you just have your protagonist really put to the test, and she fucking comes through it all. Like, yeah. It's good. I really like her as a final girl.
So what's your number on this one?
I would say, like I said,
she's not the final girl. She's the only girl.
Well, that does make her the final girl, de facto.
All right.
But the,
technically.
She's the best kind of correct. The, like I said, I remember trailers for this and then never watched it because I thought it would be stupid. And I'm like, fuck, I like this. Like, I think had I seen this before, I would recommend this to people as a fun movie that is a little outside of what you might normally watch. Cause like, we get that all the time is you talk to people, oh, you're a horror movie podcast. Okay. So what's a cool horror movie I probably haven't seen? I bet a lot of people haven't seen this.
Yeah.
I don't think this would ever, cause, you know, we all know, man, if you're listening to this podcast, you look at the internet. Like, if you make a top 50 horror movies, this is not on it.
No.
But it's fun.
Yeah.
It's good fun.
True.
And, you know, the only potential snag, I would say, to showing this to, like, a non-horror audience is that it does get really gory, you know, in a couple spots. And, like, they very lovingly shoot that eye trauma at the end, you know.
Ooh, golly.
It's a little hokey, but do they go for it. But I think that would be enough to have some people pull out and just be like, nope, can't watch this. So I love it. I think it works, but I can see how that might have limited the appeal of this film. And so I think this is super, super fun. Like, this is a really unexpected delight for me, this week. Which is came out of nowhere. Thus, the very nature of being unexpected. God damn it. I'm an asshole. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking. So I would say absolutely watch it. You may not get the same mileage, but I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10. I really, really had fun with this. So I'm going to say let's go 8 out of 10. Y'all remember flip phones?
Do y'all remember flip phones?
Way back in the 2007. Never mind.
In the early. Yeah, this, this didn't like thrill my soul through and through. There were some cool moments when I was kind of on the edge of my seat. There was a lot where I just wished there was another dude as the lead, or the antagonist. And, you know, the weird cleavage things aside, Rachel Nichols is kicks ass all over this movie. It's not great. It's not bad. It was fun to watch. So, yeah, I'd give it a 6.5 out of 10. So a Rottweiler walks into a bar.
and then again. I thought this was, pretty cool. It's like, I really like, Aja and these guys. I like, if you notice that a lot of these crew members are the same people that worked on all their stuff, you know, they seem to be the same crew, which is neat because that shows a bit of range, for what they're doing, and it's neat to see them tackle different stuff. I would not, however, recommend seeing the most recent thing, The Ninth Life of Lewis Trax, is not so good. I thought this was really cool overall. I enjoyed it. So I'm going to say 7.5 out of 10, or not 7.5, pardon me, 7. 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. Yeah, the girlfriend, she writes for the paper in the lifestyle section. Her name, hallway doorknob? Yeah. Hallway
doorknob. P. Pierre Griffin.
Her name? Kaiser Sose.
All right, now let me take just a real quick break here, and we'll get right back with our final film.
I have the P2.
God.
We did that joke twice before we even started.
I'm keeping it in, but fuck you guys.
So finally this evening we have Better Watch Out, or Mejor Que Tengas Cuidado, which is currently a Shudder exclusive. It was on video on demand a little bit. Was released on the festival circuit last year as Safe Neighborhood. And, they found a better title, which is for the best. True. I feel like. This is like the inverse of The Babysitter.
That was the problem, is I could not stop comparing it to that, despite the fact they are totally disparate plots, and that's unfair, but man, do I like Babysitter in this.
Man, is this better than Babysitter.
Oh, you're a
monster. And I liked Babysitter.
Okay.
This all is because right. it's a little more grounded. It doesn't have the like weird, gross stereotype thing going on. Whether or not they were playing that for a clever idea or something on Babysitter. Well, okay. First off, this movie depends on a couple of twists that we are absolutely going to discuss in their entirety. So if you think you might want to see this movie and at least one out of three of us recommends that you do, you should probably go see it and pause us and then come back and we'll talk about it. Ready? Go for it, Charlie.
I was just saying pause right there.
Yeah, he just said it really fast.
Oh,
he's making the opposite joke you were making.
Very well. So this movie starts as kid who's too old for a babysitter has a babysitter come over.
Oh, yeah. Apparently he's supposed to be 12.
Yeah.
12 is old enough to legally babysit other children.
Yep. So basically same setup as babysitter.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a rapport with her and obviously has a little bit of a crush on her.
Yeah.
And is...
I would say the movie tells us he has a rapport with her. We see none of it.
Not as much as we do in
the babysitter. You absolutely believe those people care about each other. Like, this movie, you never once feel like these people have met.
You have to take it on faith
that
they have a long-standing babysitting relationship. I mean,
that's how I got into college. I got a letter of recommendation for my long-standing babysitting relationship.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like she has a rapport and chemistry with him in the beginning.
I never felt like that.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
Oh, did you guys also notice that she is the same actress as well as the friend actor are the two actors that play the kids in The Visit?
I did not recognize either of them.
I didn't either.
Which is wild because they're only a year out.
It blew our goddamn minds when we realized that. Yeah.
And I really liked The Visit too. So I remember me being super on board with it, you being kind of on board with it.
Here's the thing about doing a show like this.
You are the June Diane Raphael of our show.
Absolutely.
Where there's nothing but the fresh scent of it's pine.
Absolutely gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like people are like, because the thing is, I want to be like, this movie I hated. The babysitter is so much better. I might have hated The Babysitter when we watched it. I literally do not remember because I can't remember what The Babysitter was about.
It was about a babysitter, man.
Right. But I had to be like, Megan, what was The Babysitter about? And she's like, you know, the one, the kid and the babysitter, and they like got along with him. I'm like, yeah. I don't remember anything else about the movie. I just remember like their relationship at the beginning and then like.
No, that was the one you and I both enjoyed and Charlie hated.
Cool. Then I stand by my first statement that I made without knowing if it was true or not.
Because right now you remember this movie.
I am ready for politics.
Yeah.
God damn it.
So there's home invasion, creepy guy stomping around the house with a flashlight and a shotgun. First big twist is that guy is actually his doofy friend.
His not quite frog brother friend.
Right. And the whole thing was staged as a way for him to pretend to be a hero and romance her.
We should pause, I think, real quick, though. I loved that part of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was effective. You guys? When you thought that was the plot, was that?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I was the edge of my seat.
I really thought that was good. Like, damn good. Which was interesting because then I kind of go, wow, like, what would that movie have been? Like, because he being an idiot made perfect sense in that scenario.
Right.
Based on what we knew about him at that point, the ask gets much, much bigger after the twist.
I think him being as competent as he is, though, because he's like, okay, I'm going to get my dad's gun and you stay here and I'm going to do the thing. And that made me go, I don't quite
But she
buy it
asks and, if yeah. his parents have a gun. He doesn't suggest it.
But he's starting to cowboy up in a way that is completely unbelievable.
But it's also the idea of like, but we also know he's trying to impress her.
Right.
So it's like, we know that. We don't know to what extent at that point.
Sure.
But it's like, he's also far too young to have any sense of his own mortality. And so I was like, fuck you, kid. You're going to get both of you killed. Because you think this is a Vigi game. And I was like, that's interesting. Because it's almost I can never remember the title of it. I think Charlie always corrects me. Maybe it's you. The one with the autistic kid in the house with the tiger.
Burning Bright.
Burning Bright.
Burning Bright, yeah.
It is almost that. Where, like, your co-protagonist is a bigger danger.
Is a load, yeah.
You know, and it's like, that's really interesting. This kid going, no, fuck it. Well, I'll pop out guns blazing like the Punisher. Bow, 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 bow. And we got this. And she's like, no, you fucking idiot. That's not how this works. People die. You know, and like, I was like, oh, fuck. That's kind of interesting. Because I watch my son have zero concept of how, like, the military works. Or, you know, like, being a criminal. Because all he knows is Call of Duty and Grand Theft Auto. Mm-hmm. And having a kid weaned on that reality, which is damn near every kid right now, is a really fascinating angle to play in a home invasion, where the first response isn't fear. It's, oh my God, I have carte blanche to do all the shit I've been training my whole life for. Forgetting video games are no way training for anything, except for being lonely and masturbating.
I mean, it's also like, that the beginning of the movie is pretty decent at building that tension, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the way that, you know, like Santa appears on the lighted Santa doll appears on the deck.
Yeah.
All that shit. Yeah, there's some good.
There's really good, because we thought we were getting, was it The Strangers?
Yeah.
We thought we were getting that. And I was like, oh, okay. That's fine. Nope. That's okay. Yeah. But like, they did a good job of being that for a while. So anyway.
Right. So after first twist, it's, well, he's, you know, he was trying to impress her and that was the whole setup. Second twist is that he's just a fucking psychopath who has engineered some plan to take out all of his romantic rivals for babysitter, but really is just kind of playing it by ear and doesn't give a fuck how many people he kills.
Right. And he's so super smart that he'll just get away with it despite any curveball thrown his way, which is
that's
a big ask.
He believes
that. And he does, though. That's the thing.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't get away.
Well, no, but at the end of the movie, everything does work exactly as he planned, and then you have, oh, oops.
She's alive.
She's alive. And he goes, yeah. Mom, I'm really worried about her. I should go to the hospital. And it's like, okay.
I'll bet it ends up, I'll bet she's fine.
The thing is, probably he's still fucked, because not that she can't talk, but still, the thing is, like, up until that second, everything he's done has worked. I cannot
maybe,
get my son to sit down
yes,
and read
maybe
a
no.
book in one sitting.
Well, nothing he's done has worked because he didn't plan on having to tie babysitter up. He didn't plan on having to shoot his best friend.
But allegedly, when the cops show up and they're looking around the house, no one immediately goes, none of this could have happened. Like, his little crazy scenario he set up appears to be working, at least at first glance.
Well, but
which
that's
is insane.
First on scene, though. I mean, like,
yeah,
we
I
don't
think
know,
when they dig
we don't
the
know 5 hours into forensics,
but
they go, you know, none of these fuckers have got gunshot residue on them.
Agreed. Huh. But the thing is like, that's just, I have a son this age. He cannot even get that far.
That's good because he's not a psychopath.
I'm not convinced that he's not a psychopath. Don't put words in my mouth. No, but what I'm saying is like he gets so far along that trail that it is just a huge ask of this movie. Because you're right. Like, you know, Charlie, the gunshot residue on if you've ever watched Law and Order, you know, like, come on. Like, there's things. But he's going so far above and beyond what... And okay, fine. Let's
but
go
I mean,
with like
but
crazy
say,
savant 12-year-old.
That. I think
like, it's
Josh
nuts.
Makes a good point that like there is kind of a winging it, but there's a belief there. But therein lies the heart of my problem with the movie. I love the babysitter character. I think she's rad. I think the stoner buddy guy is. I think he's a good character overall. Parents are useless. Second boyfriend with
which,
the,
by
with
the way,
the
wasting Patrick Warburton should be a punishable offense.
And Virginia Madsen.
That's true. And Virginia Madsen, yeah.
Which we didn't notice for the first part because she's on her second face.
Yes, she is.
And, you know, not to.
And that's fine.
Not to be an asshole about it, but she.
I saw in the opening credits she's in the movie and I kept waiting for her to show up and I was like, oh God. Oh, okay. Well, anyway.
Well, Patrick Warburton's still on his first face.
So at the beginning of the movie, so herein lies the heart of my issue with it, and I would be very curious to see where you guys land on this stuff. At the beginning of the movie, when nobody is watching but us, you have our two characters in his, the main boy's bedroom. And a stoner friend is like playing video games, a little crass, whatever, and this, that, whatever else. And our main character guy is kind of playing it up all nice and kind of like sweet in a way, sort of like kind of the innocent, sort of high road type of thing. For nobody's benefit but ours as the viewer. Because later, once he pistol whips babysitter, she falls down the stairs and she wakes up all bleary, which is handled amazingly, by the way. That was really cool. When she wakes up and she's like trying to piece together what's going on, that was great. That was a neat little, like, turnabout. But then it's like, he's just dropping F-bombs about this, and this thing, that, whatever, and blah, 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 blah. And from that point forward, I'm just like, whatever. It's just sort of like, what it reminded me of is it reminds me of that Funny or Die video with the little toddler chastising Will Ferrell for needing the rent money.
That was super good.
You know, like, because it feels like, and maybe that's part, maybe that's what they're going for. They're wanting him to sound ridiculous and absurd or whatever else. But just from the point that she's in the chair forward, it's just like all of his big talk and all the rest of the kind of stuff and all the stuff that's supposed to be menacing. It just sounded like somebody who's walked me through phonetically how to speak a couple sentences in Korean.
The Donnie Darko.
Yeah, it just doesn't, it's not, I don't speak Korean. You know, like I can't speak Korean. It's not a thing I can do. You could walk me through saying this couple sentences, but I don't speak Korean. And I just don't believe this kid's Korean is the thing.
I got to tell you, I've never been more excited to quote someone out of context.
I don't believe this kid's Korean.
God damn it.
He's going to fuck out of here. You can't make me kimchi.
Jesus Christ. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, that's the thing that really grates on me. Cause she's great. She is, her arc and her dealing and her strength. And all that stuff and her, like, problem solving, all the rest of it is really solid. But it's just like the level of evil, competency, boastfulness, and every other thing. It just, like, none of that stuff worked for me at all.
That is so interesting because I really enjoyed his character. And I thought he was genuinely creepy at times, just watching the masks come off. And he'll put it back on for a bit, and then the mask will come back off. And like remember when you accidentally killed your friend's hamster and you felt so bad about it, you came to me and cried, and he's like, that wasn't an accident. I'm like, maybe because I've had the experience in real life of, Zach's ex-wife could do that.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Where she...
We've all known at least one person.
Like, she would go... I watched her go to him crying and tell him about a fight she had with my wife, only switching what she had said for my wife, vice versa, and then turn around and immediately be smiling.
Mm-hmm.
And that kid got that to me. So, like, he was off for sure, but I think he was off in the right way. He just came across as completely unpredictable, willing to do whatever it takes to... And at the end, it's not really even about keeping her. It's just kind of, you know.
Well, it's just, you know, I'm mad putting, and I'm losing a thing.
Well, it's putting pins and butterflies in
it. Yeah, it is. The thing is, the part where I don't follow that as far as I think you did is, I don't know, maybe this does make sense. Maybe, I don't know, I could be wrong. But, like, his terror at, like, the smell of fucking pot in the house is genuine. You know,
seems like it, yeah.
You know, and again, it's, you can go, well, it's because it's going to fuck up his plan, and he's so careful. But it's like, and yet he's reacting in a very real childish way. And they keep playing on these things where he is super naive, like a kid his age should be.
The thing with the
pencil. But then he flips into criminal mastermind.
Back on the door.
Yeah, I just.
It's like, who the hell thinks you can balance a pencil on a doorknob sideways while closing a door? Like,
yeah, and it's just, he does things that are a dipshit kid thing that you do to not get in trouble. But then he's also twirling his mustache in the next scene or manipulating people emotionally. And he kind of whips between all three. And it's like, I think you get to pick two of those.
And I think you can.
I don't know that you can do all three without me going, well, then one of these is not, I can't believe all three.
I don't think that he is a criminal mastermind.
But I think we kind of have to believe he's on his way.
Yeah, but at the very end, he is able to cover his tracks.
In a way that I can't.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like, you know, none of us could.
I think that he's a psychopath.
Right.
Who has the ability to do some really cold-ass mental calculations, but at the same time is also a kid hitting puberty.
Well, maybe the better question...
You know... I bought
maybe him. The better question is, are we supposed to believe he is intelligent, or are we supposed to believe he's fucking this up from moment one? Because I believe the movie wants us to think he's intelligent and calculating. And when shit goes wrong, he goes, I just need a second to think. And then he comes up with the next thing, like a Bond villain.
And then he goes, this was all part of my plan.
And sure, you know, but it's like, but I think you're right. We're watching him improv his way through a scenario that's gone out of his control. And yet, I think we're supposed to believe he's so smart that that's fine. And I don't buy that for a second. But I don't think the movie ever gives you he's in way over his head. The babysitter says it constantly because that's what any rational adult would do.
Right.
But I don't think the movie says it. And that is part of what frustrated me, is that, like, I think I'm supposed to believe this kid is so good at this shit, I should be terrified of anything he might do next. And even if you think you've gotten the best of him, don't worry, he's got a contingency plan to think of on the spur of the moment that fucks you over.
I don't think it's and I don't so believe good at what he does. Ever. I think that he is willing to take whatever action he thinks is necessary.
Sure, but that's the thing is, that should be sloppy and shitty. And the fact that it always looks like it isn't.
It is, he just cleans it up at the end.
But that's the thing, that's all it takes. Like, you know, the fact that he goes, okay, I'll use this and do that and call this guy and have him do this and write the thing so he can do the thing so when he hangs himself it looks like this. Like, it's, even in his improv, it's too premeditated. I think we're supposed to think he is a criminal mastermind psychopath, and I don't buy it.
I think he's just winging it.
But I think, I think he is improvising. I think he is. And I think that is part of my beef. I don't know. But Charlie, where do you land on that?
Yeah, this is the tough thing to suss out, is that, like, you know, I'm not going to say, like, oh, Mr. Knows Everything, but I do think that this is where the core of it is. Like, if his performance works for you in totality, then you dial into the winging it, but making it work because your brain is clicking at a level that is very different from the average person walking around. If it doesn't click for you, then you're going to go down a multitude of different paths. Matt, I think you went down a slightly different one than I did. I just focus on the fact that I think his performance is awful. But, you know, it's sort of like, but I think that's what happens. You know, and we've said this before, like, if a thing's not working for you, that's when you can find the nitpicks kind of thing, you know. And you know, I'm very glad I've got to have a chance to watch this again, because actually I'm much softer on it this time around. Than when I first came out of it the first time around, because I was quite spitting mad coming out of it the first time around. And honestly, I think I may have misremembered some of the looking up through the eyebrows level of crazy as far as the performance goes. Like, there's not as much of that as I seem to have remembered, you know?
He's not too D'Onofrio usually.
Yeah, it's not, there's not too much of that kind of stuff as far as that's concerned, but, I think what, Like Josh, when you said it, when he leans over to her ear and says the thing about, like, you know, it was an accident about the hamster, you're right. Like, that is a creepy thing for sure. And, like, the scene upstairs where, boyfriend guy is going to the thing where, and he just kind of patangs him in the head and then kind of patangs him in the head again. And his reaction is the way that a kid reacts when you're like, I just crashed two little cars together. Like, whoa, look at that. But he's like, does it with a baseball bat to a person's head and has the exact same reaction. Like, those two are great. Those two are awesome. Still,
he's just like, holy shit, that was cool.
Yeah, that.
And that stuff is fucking.
I love that. I just feel like they undermine it sometimes.
But
yeah.
It's like, but it's all the monologuing and all the rest of the stuff. I'm just like, okay, perfect example. They got like the forgetting serum stuff, and he puts it in the wine bottle and like holds it up to her mouth. Like, it's like, and those are parts that lose me, because it's like, dude, we're trying to establish that he is a complete sociopath, psychopath, kind of fractured, whatever. It's like, that is metal tubing and a funnel. Like, it's just like, you shove it down her throat. and you're going to get that into her stomach. And it's sort of like, but if we're playing the kid angle of him being naive, as Matt says, like, there's got to be a fuzzy middle there someplace. And it's sort of like, but again, I think my hang up is that it just the kid's performance just doesn't work for me the way I think that they're wanting it to, for everybody. But that's not universal, because Josh is very much in the majority. Like, almost everybody that I saw it with is in the kind of the Josh area.
Kiddo won awards, which baffled me.
One of those things where, like, I've felt since last year that there's been a burr in my butthole about this movie. And so it's been good to go back and visit it, but I haven't softened entirely, you know? So, oh, kudos for the Home Alone thing, by the way. That was fabulous. It's just like, and the aftermath shot of like the yellow dripping down with the blood, and then like the little point, the paint void behind him.
I like how they handled that, honestly. Just having that noise to me was way better than having his head explode.
It is.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm mixed.
So was the paint.
Hi-oh. It's really interesting. Like, I feel like the first 20 minutes of the movie lampshades the next 30, and then it kind of becomes its own thing. But the paint can thing is a moment of true tension, which is one of the only ones outside of the opening sequence before you realize it's his buddy pretending to be an invader. And then it's like, fuck me. That is disgusting and gross and amazing. And the way they shoot it is awesome. And then you never get a payoff shot of the gore.
Mm-hmm.
And that can either be a choice or a budget thing.
I think it was a choice, honestly.
Or both. I don't think there's any lack of money on the screen. This thing is beautiful. It's very well done. But I was just like, I wanted that to pay off at some point. And I literally said out loud, are we not going to get to see it? Because if you're going to argue what it does to someone, and I get it, we know the result, that the question's answered without seeing it, and yet to me it was like, that was a weird Chekhov's paint can moment of like, you've got to show the aftermath of the paint can in a graphic way. I get it. And it honestly, it's like a Lovecraft monster. It could only be unsatisfying, but I want him to take a swing at it, even if it was part of like the parents coming home. If you wait that long, and all of a sudden it's just like, fuck me, that's disgusting when you walk in, because it would be the first thing they saw when they opened the door. Because I love watching the blood and the paint mix. Like, it's super well done. I got weird gore blue balls on that one. Gore blue balls is Gore Vidal's cousin. So I don't know. So I appreciate it, but it was still a little for me.
All right, what's your number on the movie? Let's just wrap it up.
Oh, sure. Did not like this. Do not want. Back away carefully. The first like few minutes before it's a different movie, I like that movie better. The paint can part is fucking dope. The rest of it's kind of eh. I don't know. Like, I'm gonna say like 4.5 out of 10. Surprisingly benign uses of Chekhov's pencil. I really thought that would be a much bigger plot point, and they whip it right out.
I thought it was going in the eye.
I did too. Yeah. Or at least it would be like a thing at the end, like, oh shit, the babysitter knows it's there, but he doesn't, or something. And it makes sense that he would know, cause that's his character. But like, yeah, I thought that would be a bigger deal.
This gave me the glee. What can I say? I really enjoyed the whole weird ride of it, and was super pissed when he stabbed the babysitter at the end, because the whole time we go, well, how's she going to get out of it? And then it's like, oh shit, are we going to be that dark? And then to have him like climb back into bed and barely miss the parents, and but then to have the "we got a live one here" that made me happy. That said, the first like couple of minutes of this until the parents left, I almost didn't make it through. I wrote, why are doorknobs at eye level? Why a giant spider? Why must mom be awful? Landline? It's like, we're in 2017. So, yeah, I had questions, but once it kicked in, I enjoyed all of the movies it turned into, and I don't know, it's like, The Babysitter had this weird, like, heart to it, whereas this is like a deeply sour ball movie, and I dug both of them. So, this isn't adjusted, by the way, for other people's low scores. This is what I thought last night when I watched it. To me, it's an 8 out of 10. Hobos, actually best friends with a shotgun.
Nice.
One last thing I wanted to point out about this. One thing I noticed when watching this again, this is going to sound like a criticism, but it's actually not a criticism, which is that this was shot in Australia, and almost everybody in the cast was Australian, save for Warburton and Virginia Madsen. And, like, every once in a while, boyfriend, babysitter, everybody at some point, well, all the Australians anyway, like, everybody at some point or other, their accent slips a little bit. Like, just in little, tiny little ways, like, barely noticeable, but you'll catch them, you know, here and there, you know? And I commend the amount of work it must take to get to where, like, 99.8% of the time you've masked it. Like, that's really impressive to me.
Anna Paquin phenomenon, yeah.
It's amazing. It's really remarkable, you know? The kids in Blood Punch, which at some point, like, we've got two really horror-y movies some week that we can throw Blood Punch in there. All three of them Australian, and they do a great job in that one, masking out, you know, and stuff. But I noticed a couple, every character did it, like, a little bit, but I just thought it was super neat how much work and time and effort that takes to do that. I think that's pretty rad. I don't want to be a snot about it. I would say if the whole second half of it with the kid's performance, just wasn't so Bond villain, you know, Bond villain and Spider-Man under roost kind of thing. Like, it just would have gone with it a lot better. I thought the girl's great. A lot of stuff was really great. But so if I was at an 8, then I would go back 2 points because of that. So I would say 6, which is higher than I thought I was going to do this afternoon. But hey, you only live once. So I would say 6. I'll say 6 out of 10. I'll say, yeah, exactly. I'll say 6 out of 10, 6 out of 10, Patrick Warburton's backup novelty tie.
It was 20 years ago today. Patrick Warburton taught the band to play. I don't know, that just gave me a Sgt. Pepper's vibe.
Which one are you going
with? Warburton's crazy holiday tie. Anyway, let's take a quick break and we'll talk about the Christmas movies we're going to do next week, shall we?
Yeah.
We shall. So next week, since we have another week before the Christmas stuff sets in, we're going to do some more Christmas movies, but not the ones that you might expect.
No.
Charlie has been looking around, found some cool stuff for us to watch. First, Whoever Slew Auntie Rue, which we've been meaning to watch since Dear Dead Delilah, because searching for the poster for Dear Dead Delilah brought that up. And I was like, what the fuck is this? This is the best title.
And how can you not want to have to say that more times? So here we are.
Whoever Slew Auntie Rue. Then Bloodbeat, the heartwarming Christmas tale of a ghost samurai? Is that what it is?
A lady gets possessed by a killer samurai ghost in Wisconsin, I believe, at a Christmas family reunion.
It is an unofficial prequel to Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD. Right.
Possibly an unofficial sequel to Der Samurai.
Possibly an official sequel to The Last Samurai.
No, that was the last. There weren't any more left.
Possibly the cousin of Samurai Jack.
All this nonsense, you know, is false. It's what happened between seasons 4 and 5 of Downton Abbey. Now, shush.
It could also be an unofficial fanfic version of a Dr. Seuss book that was never released called Sam or I.
I think you got it. I think you got it.
Lovely.
I really... Yeah, I nailed it. I'm good at this. Okay, cool.
So Whoever Slew Auntie Rue, Bloodbeat, and The Body is our last one. That's a new one starring Das Fassbender.
Gotta have a little Fassbender.
Avatar the Last Fassbender, as I always call him.
Yep.
And our short is called Life of Death, and it is not the Life of Death short that we've done before, but a brand new one. So we'll link that on the site for you to have, and watch the movies, listen to the podcast. We're on iTunes again. It's pretty great.
It is.
As always, I'm going to start saying this at the end of every show. You can get our entire archive at horrorshowhotdog.com. So mm-hmm. whether you're getting the podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever, or Podbean, you can always go to our home on the Wibs for the other, you know, like 150 of them that aren't up.
Closer to 200.
In the feed, yeah. The ones that aren't in the feed.
There's a lot. Yeah. Did you want to do your normal sign-off?
And, you know, bleh.
Oh, okay, cool.
That's not the play was implied.
Goddamn, we're good. Anyway, super excited that we're back on iTunes. There's a certain amount of just like, it feels legitimizing. And that's the saddest thing because we do a podcast. Yeah. And I love that. And I love the medium. But man, it feels good. And so, I will also, to piggyback on Josh's note, say this is a great time where if you've ever been like, yeah, I should tell my friends about this show. This would be a great time to do that because, there are plenty of people where you go, yeah, we do a podcast. You just have to use your Googles and find a spot for it and blah, blah, blah. And people go like, is it on iTunes? And you go, no. And they go, this would be the time to get those folks. And we'll discuss that more as we move on in the show. But thank you everyone for your patience for us getting our website back to any kind of semblance of normality. Normality. I made up a word. Normalcy.
I like that one.
Thank you. And, you know, all that shit. So yeah, make your lives easier. Just subscribe to us on iTunes if that's your preferred method. Otherwise, we'll be on all the usual places. Which reminds me, I gotta resubmit us to, Google Play and Stitcher and all that shit because now that the feed's active again, I should make sure that that's updated with the current thing. I'll do that too. We'll let you know once that's all ready. Anyway, as far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time and I'm sorry.
I'd say 2/3 of the time that always makes me giggle, and it's like I know the joke's coming. It still makes me laugh. This is Charlie down in Austin. A couple super fast things to recommend. You heard me talk about Shape of Water. It'll be expanding into this next week. Please go see it. It's hard to pick a favorite Guillermo del Toro movie, but golly, is it so good! Really, really lovely piece of work. So please go see that if you can. That'll be coming out soon. And also, the day after Christmas, Tuesday the 26th, the second trade paperback for the graphic novels, the series Lady Killer. If you've not read that, it's fucking awesome. It's like a contract killer lady, but it's like set in the 50s kind of deal. It's really good. Its second book will be coming out December 26th, and as we all know, independent artists of all different stripes will need all the help they can get, especially if all the rules on the internet go away. So definitely check that out if you can. If you're into blood and gore and 50s tropes and stuff, it's super rad. With all that, this is Charlie. Take care. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you soon. Bye bye.
Yeah, 3, 2, 1, blast off. I'm so sleepy. I said 3, 2, 1 instead of
you
clapping.
You did instead of clapping.
Just cut it. Don't make me look like an asshole.
You wouldn't make me look like an asshole, would you?
Okay.
Until after the credits.
And Tom waits in for the rest of the evening. I'm a Nighthawk at the diner. Hash browns over easy. Chillin' in a bowl. Burgers and fries. What kind of pie?